back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 267. Coming at you with a Bloom Board episode here on a Tuesday night. We're going to talk some three types of strikes and much, much more. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
I am doing well. I don't have any major/interesting life updates for the pod this evening, but that's probably a good thing. I'm hanging in there doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well as well. It's just another beautiful day in the life. Nothing too crazy around here. So watching the Giants just struggles continue on and on, and hopefully we're 6 weeks away from Bob Melvin getting fired.
And you've been on a anti-Melvin kick lately.
He's so bad. He's so just bad. Like, act like you care. Like, he doesn't even care. It's so bad. So I'd like to see him out of there. Bruce Bochy will be a free agent after this year. Posey can bring him back.
Cool, bring him back.
Yep. Bring the band back together. We could have some good times by the bay in that regard. But yeah, that's about all I have going. I've just been watching ball, recording podcasts, writing articles, living the dream. So nothing crazy.
Hey, still doing it in mid-August. So kudos to you on that. You dropped like 20 different news items in the Discord today, which is pretty good. I was busy today, so it was good to catch up on that and follow all your stuff.
Yeah, spending an hour in the tire shop trying to get the truck aligned to tell you after an hour that they can't get it aligned to come back tomorrow. Yeah, it's had time to drop some news. So I'll probably be dropping them again tomorrow if there's anything on the Twitter at that point in time when I'm sitting.
Can't get it aligned? It's tough.
Apparently, there's too much mud in my truck from work that I have to get it fixed. So they have some fancy like digital alignment thing, and I don't know. I don't know. Out of my pay grade, but let's just say I haven't been happy with the situation over there the last few weeks. So yeah, that's a whole other podcast for a whole other day.
I won't. I won't poke that one anymore.
Yeah, but all right. Before we get to the news and notes and Bloom Board time, just a heads up to everybody: we're here tonight, Tuesday. Will be your Thursday night with your Fab Week 22 preview. Next Tuesday, there'll be no show because on Wednesday, August 20th, it is the 2026. I did not stutter or missay anything. The 2026 Meatball Draft. DC, we draft the first 11 rounds, so we're going to record that as a group. And then so there'll be no show on Tuesday night. Figure out where things go after that. But no Tuesday show. Just so you know, don't panic. We are around. We are alive. We're not on vacation. Don't call us slackers. We will have content for you, just not on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it'll be Wednesday night. It'll be after the draft. You're going to get our kind of raw reactions of just general how it went. So I can't wait. I'm going to do how I'm prepping for the 2026 Meatball Draft. Just going to kind of share my screen, make a spreadsheet, make some rankings, that sort of thing, and do some Q&A. I will do that for our fine Patreon folks, and that'll be sometime early next week. But yeah, next Wednesday night, cannot wait. It's going to be good. I've got the second. It looks like I'm going to have the second KDS pick in the 2026 Meatball Draft. Probably leaning second, but I need to think about it. Just get Ohtani, Judge, or figure something else out, but I'll probably just do that.
Yeah, I'll have one of the last options in the KDS, so I'll kind of see where the
dust not
settles. See where the dust settles in this one. So I happen to take Royce Lewis in the third round. We take Tyler Fitzgerald in early on, stuff like that. It's kind of that's the gift and the curse of the early draft is you'll get some deals. I think like what did Weimer get? Bo Bichette in like round like 9 or 10.
That's Langford. Turned out
pretty. Langford, 11. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Right, like, there's just certain ones that just fall, and you're just like, yeah, that's pretty, pretty good. I remember listening to Mike Mager and James Anderson. They mentioned a handful of like pitchers that didn't even get drafted in the first 11 rounds. So those were great because those are technically were probably like SP3s and 4s at the time, if not, and you turned out to be potential aces on your staff. It's the gift and the curse of the early draft. And for those that are worried, it's not for the overall. It's just a standalone Draft Champions League, so nothing to worry about there as well.
Yeah. So there's going to be, we're going to record, we do it on Zoom with all 15 people there kind of in person. Then it'll be on Rob DiPietro's Deadpool Hitter podcast. So that'll be fun to kind of check out. It's basically just 15 of us kind of shooting the shit and drafting together. But yeah, then right when we finish that, we're just going to fire up our own recording and go at it kind of raw, unfiltered, how we think we did. So we'll see. It'll be a good night.
It will be. And Michael C in the chat goes, Casey Schmidt, round eight, Bubba. Run back early Giant, second base.
That would be on brand for you. It's just some hot Giant that, home run.
You just lost catch your save, out. Buddy.
Yeah, that sucks. Casey Schmidt, round eight. I like that.
Yep, not going to happen. I'll bet money that I will not be doing that. Can't bet for everybody else, but not for me. Bet, promise you that one. All right, couple bits of news and notes here. Most of the news is good news these days. Guys are rehabbing. Guys are coming back off the IL, so nothing too dire right now. But there is one piece of dire news, Ryan. Josh Hader to the IL with a left shoulder strain, undergoing further testing to determine the extent of the injury. When I hear shoulders, I'm already thinking at least a month. That's just the reality of my situation. Plus the Astros, yes, they're fighting for the West, but I'd be shocked if they're not in the playoffs already, basically, between the West and a wild card. I know it's not official, but you know what I'm trying to say there. Yeah. So they need him for October. What's your thoughts on this one? Because I am going to wait till the news comes out by the end of the week, but heavily leaning in the drop zone right about now.
Yeah, I mean, just at the pace at which this went from Hader's not available on Monday to instant pretty much IL on Tuesday, this does not seem like a minimal stint, which is just brutal. I'm pretty much out of nowhere. Like, the walks were up a little bit for Hader, 7 walks in his last 10 innings, but had gone scoreless. Like, this season, 76 strikeouts, 16 walks for Josh Hader, 2.05 ERA, 28 saves, was on pace. And I mean, you just even look at, like, feel like I'm eulogizing Josh Hader. I'm about to at this point. Like, 7 straight seasons, non-COVID season, 7 straight seasons for Josh Hader with 30 plus saves, a sub-3 ERA in all but 2 of them. Like, this has been one of the elite closers for a long time, and definitely sucks for this to come out of nowhere. I will probably be dropping Hader just for the reasons that you mentioned. And I guess the question that we all turn to, of course, is who's going to fill in it. We've had plenty of discussion on the Discord. The layman's answer might be Brian Abreu, who's kind of always been the plan B behind Hader for years. That would be my guess. Like, Brian Abreu's been really good. He's got a 1.67 ERA, 24% strikeout minus walk, but maybe Houston wants to keep him in that role where he's at. We don't know. So Bennett Souza got the save, I think, Monday night, has 4 saves this season. So let's see what happens over these next 4 days if Houston gets save opportunities. But I would lean Abreu. And if it is Abreu, if Abreu gets a couple saves, like, buckle up for Fab. Yeah. Like, that will be a pretty monster bidding war for Brian Abreu for anybody who needs saves at this point, which is a lot of us.
Yeah, and I was telling Ben on the Fab recap show today for Bench with Bubba that I'm not saying it's a shame Hader got hurt. We don't want Hader to get hurt. It's a shame this didn't happen 2 weeks ago right after the trade deadline when there's like 9 options available. Yeah. Because then this would have been a lot easier to fill the void, potentially. Now everyone's fighting, like you've makesfully said, for one option to make this happen. Abreu should be the guy. To your point, that in the Discord, I was mentioning Souza. Got the one out save, his 4th of the year. So they've used him in that position more than once, was my point. So it's not like it's out of the possibility. Like, it's kind of almost like a Matt Strom situation. So in a deep league, Souza could still bring some value for the next 6 weeks if you want to, you know, think outside the box a little bit for a lot cheaper. Eniel De Los Santos was in there with 2 outs, and the lefty came in, so they brought Souza in. Abreu had the night off for pitching a lot on Sunday. So that's why it's hard to gauge what's really taking place here. The thing that bugs me with the Astros, and there's a long list of things that bug me. If you want long list,
talk about separate podcasts.
Yeah. If you want long list, go look at the weekly injury update they drop on you. That is the biggest form of word salad you will ever see. And if you can try to decipher anything out of that, kudos to you. But that's a long list. But when it comes to the Astros, Hader pitched 36 pitches on Friday. 36 pitches. Didn't pitch all weekend. And they said they didn't know until before the game on Monday that his shoulder was hurting. I find that hard to believe. Like, I know there weren't save chances over the weekend, but I find it hard to believe that it was all of a sudden before the game on Monday that this triggered. And that's where I get annoyed, because this is the fantasy person.
Fantasy. He was in our lineups.
That's my point. Like, yep. we could have avoided this, but the Astros, because of their phenomenal medical reporting and thorough analysis of what takes place, they botched another one. So,
yeah, I look forward to Hader being added to that, like, literal essay of injury updates that just, it's a ton of words, and it just means you get nothing out of it. It's like a corporate presentation.
Yes. Like, I hope it's like ChatGPT that does that for them, because it's just, it's hilarious. It just, it's too much. But yeah, Hader gone, likely a drop, barring some hysterical news. And you also have to trust the Astros with that news. So yeah, I digress. Chase Burns, the Reds made it kind of made it official on Tuesday. Tito Francona said Chase Burns will have an innings limit, but Tito Francona didn't know how they would go about this. Is it going to be shortened starts? Is it going to be piggybacks? Is it going to be skip a start here and there? It feels like it's going to be a crochet situation. Who knows, Ryan? But you're probably not dropping him. I just want to get your thoughts on this, because if it is like crochet, that still brings tons of strikeouts and a potential ratio upside.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing, is there's you can limit these guys, but you could still fantasy-wise make them still valuable. So it all depends how the Reds do it. If they go six-man, piggyback would probably be ideal. The Garrett Crochet treatment of last season was not ideal when you're actually starting the game and only going 3-4 innings. But there's a real chance that Chase Burns, for as good as he's been, like, skills-wise, I mean, 57 strikeouts in 34 innings, that is obscene. There's a chance Chase Burns doesn't get a single win in the majors this season, which is pretty bonkers. He's got a 5.24 ERA, 1.34 WHIP. Like, the actual surface stats outside of strikeouts have been really bad. It hasn't been his fault. Like, the skills are phenomenal, but just kind of wild for all the money spent on Burns. And I feel like, process wise, it was money well spent. We may not get a single win out of the guy this year, which is pretty nuts.
That is crazy. But yeah, hold the line.
Yes.
Unless they say something just insane about his usage, which
even if it is like 3-4 innings, I mean, look, at this point in the season, standings is everything, where you're bunched and that sort of thing. But like, even if it is 3-4, like, Garrett Crochet down the stretch last season was still plenty valuable. Everyone was complaining about lack of wins and that sort of thing. But you can still get 3-4 innings and still have good ratios, good Ks. If you do it twice in a week, even better. So yeah, wait and see with Burns, but certainly newsworthy for sure.
And the Reds are actually close to the third wild card spot, so they're still contending at this point in time. So it's not just a complete, well, let's just save them for 2026. A little post-mortem, I guess, on this one. Shane McClanahan, Felix Bautista, even spell check didn't catch that one. Grayson Rodriguez and Zach Eflin all had season-ending surgery in the last 48 hours. So if you're crazy enough to hold them, or you had an IL spot that you could probably use for someone else, get rid of them, is my point. And we'll have to evaluate that come the offseason.
We will. I thought you were going to go candlelight vigil on us here with the
they're no mascot.
The quad surgeries. But yeah, brutal year for pretty much all those guys. I mean, obviously McClanahan and Grayson. We had moved on from those guys. We never really moved on to those guys. But I don't know, Zach Eflin, season-ending back surgery. That's tough.
That sucks, because when Eflin came back from the IL, like, he was available in a lot of my leagues, and I spent not insane money, but I picked him up in a lot of places going, okay, he could be a difference maker for like 7 or 8 weeks.
Right.
Made one start.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's good.
And the Bautista thing, it sounds like next year is in extreme serious doubt, which really sucks.
Yeah, because I believe one of the quotes I read today in my hour-long tires tweet session was Felix Bautista had season-ending shoulder surgery for a severe shoulder injury. Shoulder injury. Like, oh, boy. So that's not like – it's almost like, is this a thoracic outlet situation, or what have we got going on here?
Yeah. We'll not be drafted in the meatball draft.
I will DM Dr. Dave for further analysis. Frankie Montas. The time has come. Your watch has ended. He's heading to the bullpen. He's been horrible in the starting rotation, so he's heading to the bullpen for the Mets. They've made that official. And they said they have not named the starter for, I believe it's Friday, for Montas' spot. But they said Sprout and some other minor leaguers are in contention to be used on Friday.
And that's what we need to keep an eye out for. Because, right, it could be Brandon Sprout, who I did, like, kind of dogged him last week. And maybe a little bit, I mean, the numbers in AAA have not been good for Brandon Sprout compared to the expectations. Did a little bit of a deeper dive after the show, which is a little bit backwards. You probably want to research before, before you start talking about these guys. But hey, man, I was on vacation last week, you know. Yeah, well, you know, didn't know Adrian Houser got traded. You know, life happens. But Brandon Sprout has been quite a bit better lately. So is at least trending in the right direction. So, and pretty much him or Nolan McLean, I guess, is the other Mets minor leaguer who could get the call. McLean's honestly, like, he's had the better skills in AAA this year. Better strikeout minus walk, extremely good ground ball rate, like an extreme ground ball guy. So really, whoever the Mets decide to use on Friday, unless it's Blackburn, could be Paul Blackburn, which is probably the pick.
Wow.
Hey, it's a possibility, but if Schroeder McLean is called up, those guys you want to go after.
Well, because the biggest thing is, well, Friday would be the 15th, so that's when players could come up and not lose their rookie eligibility. So I was about to say, if it was before the 15th, Blackburn makes a ton of sense, actually.
Oh, is that the service time?
That's what I've been seeing. Well, to qualify for rookie of the year next year, not to that's what I've been seeing everywhere. Who knows what's real and what's fake, but that's what I've been seeing. All right, that wraps up the news. Let's get into the Bloom Board, and it's a different one, but a good one that can maybe, I don't know, maybe it's therapy is what this is going to turn into.
Who knows what it'll turn into, but here's what we have started. So this is, we've done this maybe a year or two ago. I call it the three types of strikes. So like typically when I'm looking, this is all for pitchers. Typically when I'm looking at pitchers, we've said this infinitely many times on the podcast. You hear this other pod, strikeout minus walk rate. Like that's what you want to look at. That's if you have one metric, that's what you want to do. Even break that down with strikeout rate and walk rate separately. But I think if you go one level deeper to kind of validate whether a strikeout rate is legit or a walk rate is legit, you can look at these per pitch kind of three types of strikes. And these three things are swinging strike rate, which is the holy grail. Like you want to get whiffs. League average is 11.5% this season. So that's what swinging strike rate is. There's called plus swinging strike rate, which is a pitcherless Nick Pollock, Alex Fast creation, which is exactly what it said, called plus swinging strike rate. So it's like 28%, really good predictor for strikeout minus walk. And then your third is kind of the bronze medal. The third place is ball percentage, or you can flip it and call it strike percentage. But basically that's just the number of pitches, includes foul balls, number of pitches that you throw that result in a strike or a ball. And that's a really good indicator for walk rate. I use ball rate all the time. So that's what these are. And what we're looking at tonight is we're going to look at, there's two boards. One of them, the first one that we're going to pull up here, is the pitchers who have the best combination of those three types of strikes yet have a ERA north of 4. So these are guys who under the hood have looked really good, but do not have the surface stats to support it. And then on the flip side is anybody with a sub 4 ERA who has the worst combination of those three types of strikes, your swinging strike, your called plus swinging, and your strike rate. So, of course, with these boards, everything's color-coded, that sort of thing. But we will just kind of do our thing and talk through some of these guys and see what we think on their outlook going forward for 25, but also maybe a little preview for next season as well.
Yeah, this is a list I might take with me to the meatball draft as guys to keep in mind with good skills that might get pushed back a little bit on that one.
Yep.
One thing I want to ask before we get into it, because it does get asked every once in a while, where do you find ball percentage?
I find it on Fangraphs, but I have to calculate it. So Fangraphs has balls and ball strikes and pitches, and so they don't actually have ball rate. Baseball HQ does. They actually, this season, we added ball rate to the Baseball HQ player link pages. So
pays to know somebody.
You can actually pull it there. Yeah. Pretty remarkable addition there. But yeah, ball percentage is actually shown on the Baseball HQ player pages. But for our show, since everything is you know, free, no paywall. I keep it to the publicly available stuff. So yeah, this is all on Fangraphs.
Perfect. All right, let's start at the top. And as Spore said, this is what I told Ben earlier. Spore goes, this is a group I find myself staying committed to almost universally. Yep. When I read this list of I read this list of Ben Titt earlier. I'm like, these are all guys that I either have on my roster or am interested in rostering at all times. It's pretty bad.
So. Which causes, and we'll talk about it with certain guys, but like for me, it causes it causes heartburn, because how long do you stubbornly stick with these guys versus you get off them? I'm about to comp to Nick Pivetta, who I love for years and years and years, and was just like, when is this going to come together? And finally it has. But like Nick Pivetta was probably somebody on this board for, you know, six of the last 7 years, because skills were so good, the results were not. And it's just at some point, it's gotta click.
Didn't know you like Ben Brown so much. All right, let's start with Dylan Cease. Good old Dylan Cease, the guy that you and I, Wednesday, argued with all offseason, but we debated this offseason.
You debated. We debated the comp. We debated the comp. The comp was not good.
I have a lot of Dylan Cease this year, and I also have his 4.52 ERA and 1.28 whip. But I look at the stuff you're mentioning. This is why I liked him before the season, and I continue to like him now. The dude's got the 15.9% swinging strike rate, the 30% CSW. The dude's got 169 strikeouts to 50 walks over 129 and a third innings pitched, which is still very, very good on the season. You know, if you will want the other stuff, Sierra, XFIPs, they're all much better than what we're seeing. But we're not getting the results. That's the bottom line, which is struggles, because he has the goods. He just can't put it together at all. It seems like it's one blow-up inning every single start. And I will continue to go to the Dylan Cease well. I will die on this hill. And I have died on it this year, and I will come back and do it again next year.
I will probably join you on that Dylan Cease come back and get hurt again, train for next season. It's just interesting. So last season, right now Dylan Cease is at 4.52. ERA. Last season, he had a 3.47 ERA. Last season, he had a 1.07 whip. This season, 1.28. You look at the skills for Dylan Cease from this season to last season, they are pretty much identical, if not slightly better this season. Strikeout minus walk, 21% this season for Cease, 20% last season. Ball percentage, 36% this season for Dylan Cease. It was 37% last season. Career high swinging strike rate for Dylan Cease. Like, this is actually the same Dylan Cease that we saw last season, and that was an absolute beast. So why is the ERA elevated? You'll hear us talk about this all the time. The BABIP is extremely high for Dylan Cease. The strand rate's extremely low. Like, this stuff fluctuates year to year. It's just one of the many reasons why trying to project starting pitchers is so difficult, because the skills can very much be there like they are with Cease, and the results haven't been. Though I will say Dylan Cease is on pace to have his fifth straight 200-plus strikeout season, which that you can pretty much always bank on with him, and it's just a matter of what the ratios are going to be. So a bad year for you to pick Dylan Cease, but he's been just as good as last season.
I guess on the bright side, if I have to find any silver lining in my liking Dylan Cease, is my argument was the 200 strikeouts. That was my argument of taking him. The ratios have not been ideal. Ben Brown, this one... This is why I love doing these boards with you, is I was looking at his page, and Ben Brown is way better than a 6.04 ERA and a 1.44 whip. And it's hard to believe, because watching him pitch, you'd think he's a 6.04 ERA and a 1.44 whip. But the 12.3% swinging strike and 31% CSW with the low ball percentage goes to 27 walks over 92 innings and 104 Ks. Like, he's been very, very good, Ryan. So maybe I'm overthinking this with him, and I've avoided him. He's come back. I'd say no fab, not doing it. But it's a guy that he could fall a lot come draft season, and we're trying not to focus on 2026, but hey, here we are. I'm interested in what another year under his belt can bring him.
This is my Nick Pivetta comp.
I'm being sarcastic, but the more I
dug, this is actually my Nick Pivetta comp.
The more I dug into it, I'm like, I could see it when I looked at it. I'm like, oh yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, dude, like, how do you have a 6+ ERA with 104 strikeouts to 27 walks? Like, that is It's absolutely bonkers. And I will just, this is just my process. I will be burned on some of these guys year to year, but a lot of times it works out as well. I kind of live and buy by strikeout minus walk, and the numbers for Ben Brown are there, the strikeout minus walk numbers, and the numbers that support that strikeout rate, that walk rate for Ben Brown are there as well. So, I mean, in terms of like the rest of this season, it's tough. I think Ben Brown piggybacked the facade, Javier Facade. Yes.
Oh man.
Today they each went.
It wasn't facade today.
Oh, was man. It? Yeah, I'm not surprised. Like, you look at Ben Brown versus Javier Assad, it's not like, oh, don't get me started.
No, but, let's do it. What are the differences between the two? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, Ben Brown like strikes people out, doesn't walk guys. Assad just does the opposite. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking rest of 2025, like, it is tough to get with Ben Brown. I totally get it. And one of your things that you've said, Bubba, is like, we've got 6-7 weeks left of the season. It's like, how do you judge and how do you weigh this kind of skills, luck versus results? And how does that going to turn around in 6 to 7 weeks? That may not happen. But yes, certainly like in draft and holds, I will be all over Ben Brown for next season. I will always side with the skills. The per pitch skills, the strikeout minus walk, it is absolutely there for Ben Brown. I get there's the two pitch mix thing out there with Ben Brown. It is pretty much forcing fastball, curveball. He's trying to work a changeup in ever so slightly. So I kind of get the two pitch pitcher guy, but there have been successful two pitch pitchers in the past. So I don't hold that too much against Ben Brown.
Yeah, it's a very interesting profile to look at. He's still super young. Like you mentioned, with Cease, it'll be pretty much common with majority of these guys, the left on base rate and the BABIP rate through the roof. Like the biggest concern I'd have with Ben Brown, because it's been this way throughout his entire career, well, short career, but even in the minors, does give up a lot of home runs. Like the home run to fly ball is pretty consistently 15%-ish, give or take, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower. But that could come back to bite you once in a while, but at the same time, it doesn't bite you a 6.04 ERA and a 1.44 whip. Pivetta has been known to go at the long ball to your comp before. And he could continue to figure things out. So Ben Brown being so young, it could turn into some pretty nice things for sure. So that's already a huge takeaway for me. And we're only on the second name on this board. Now, question for you, Ryan, let's just throw this out there. If you were doing a 2026 draft, say next Wednesday, would you take Ben Brown in the first 11 rounds?
No, but yeah,
I wouldn't either.
I don't love him that much. Well, I just like, I don't think you need to pay that at all. Like, I don't even know if he'll have a rotation spot, but it would be more like mid-20s, something like that.
If he doesn't have a rotation spot next year, I think that means the Cubs spent some money, which would probably make Cubs fans very happy. But I heard Jed Hoyer doesn't like to do that. Sonny Gray, another guy that I usually have tons of shit. This is my board, dude. Good Lord. 4.06 ERA, 1.15 whip, which I can live with the whip. The ERA could be a little better, but still not horrible. About 12% swinging strike, 31% CSW. He's another guy. He's got 148 Ks and 135 innings to just 22 walks, which is absolutely insane. His xFIP and Sierra below 3, so he's been very good in that regard. Sonny Gray's been great, and we were worried about him in the preseason because of maybe like the spring training numbers. Like he's pulling a full Zach Greinke on us, not really giving a damn. But come in season, he has been awesome and a guy that definitely should have better numbers than he has now, but he doesn't.
Yeah, and I don't know. Sonny Gray like barely makes this list because the cutoff is 4 for ERA, so it is one of those kind of arbitrary things. But everything else for Sonny Gray, I mean, 11. He's actually having like a really good year. Like 11 wins for Sonny Gray, 1.15 WHIP, which is on the board, but 148 Ks, like you said. Everything else is there except for the ERA, and even the ERA isn't too bad. So a very nice pick where Sonny Gray was going in drafts, especially because I was having immediate concerns about Gray. Like you mentioned, spring training was so bad, and it wasn't just the results in spring training for Sonny Gray. It was the fact that the velocity was down. It was the fact that he unveil some injury that he had at the end of the previous season. He's 35. Like there have been injury concerns with Sonny Gray, but he has managed to overcome all that with a really skill supported, like solid season. Question going forward, Sonny Gray is just like father time, man. Right. Next season's going to be age 36, but I don't see any sign of decline in the skills for Sonny Gray at all. He looks really
good. He's not a fireballer, so I'm a little less.
That's another thing. He is somewhat in that sweet spot of velocity where he throws. Where's he at? 91.9 this season.
He's a pitcher.
He knows how to pitch, which is good.
Spencer Strider, good thing you made this board before he got beat up in Queens. It says 4.04 ERA and 1.3 WHIP on this board. He now has a 4.69 ERA after that shellacking on Tuesday night. But we do have a 14.5% swinging strike, 28% CSW, 38% ball.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about it before the show. We talked about it off and on throughout the season since Spencer Strider came back. He hasn't looked Spencer Strider-esque, but I didn't expect him to coming off his injury. So the fact he has that swinging strike rate is actually pretty impressive to me, all things considered.
I was going to say, the actual swing and miss is kind of Spencer Strider-esque. I always go back. I always credit Collette for this, Jason Collette. I don't know if this is actual Colletteism, but he always says this, that command is always kind of that last thing to come back after Tommy John. I know for Strider was internal brace, but like just looking at this board, that looks to be exactly what's happening here. It's just like the stuff is there for Spencer Strider. It's just the command has not been there. Like that ball rate, that 38% ball rate. I don't think I said this at the top, but league average is like 35-36%. Just shows kind of something is a tick off, which, yeah, like you would kind of expect that for somebody coming off a long layoff like Strider. But to me, it's really encouraging, honestly, what Strider's done in terms of the missed bats, getting called swinging strikes. Like, he will definitely go in the meatball draft next Wednesday. It's just a matter of how early, especially. I mean, the biggest thing with Spencer Strider to me long term is that IP column. Like, he's still healthy. He's still throwing. If he makes it through 2025 unscathed, like, feel like it's all systems go for next season. I will probably be too high on Spencer Strider, higher than you are. But I don't know. If that command comes back, this could be like a not so diminished version of Strider that we saw at his peak.
Yeah, if the price is right, I'm interested. I still think it's going to go higher than I'd be wanting.
He will go high, I think.
Okay, again, for fun, would you rather take a chance on Spencer Strider or Jacob DeGrom?
DeGrom. I don't even think you're taking a chance on DeGrom, but
yeah, I think I'd probably go Strider out of the two, but we shall see. Wait, what? Yeah, I'll take Strider.
You just flipped each other then, I guess.
Yeah. Scott Burks and Chance says Shane Wall walks off the Dodgers. That means the Padres are about to be tied with the Dodgers for first place. Thanks to these guys, baby. Angels own the Dodgers this year. They can call them daddy.
Six in a row. Yep.
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. What's not beautiful is Jesus Luzardo. The first half was beautiful. The second half, not so much. Gave up 8 runs in Great American Small Park on Tuesday to add icing onto this cake. 4-2 ERA, 1.35 whip. 13% swinging strike, 30% CSW. I'd love to know what these numbers look like just first half alone when he was just dominating everybody. It's been a rough go, Ryan.
It's actually interesting. First half, second half, more strikes for Luzardo in the second half, fewer whiffs though. So hasn't changed that much for Jesus Luzardo from first to second half. I'm looking at Baseball HQ's splits here. I don't know what to think of Luzardo. And another one where, like, similar to Strider, it is really good to see Luzardo throw 133 innings, 24 games started so far with, like, yeah, you can point to the, like, that three-start disaster stretch, really the two-start disaster stretch where he gave up, like, whatever, 18 runs or something in two straight. So, I don't know, I mean, the skills are right there for Luzardo. Like, I can't sit here and say it's tough to roster. He's been extremely, extremely volatile and frustrating in the second half. But, like, I think all told, the end of the day, you look at these numbers on the aggregate, like, this has been a decent step forward for Jesus Luzardo, especially if he can get through this entire season at 150, 160 innings. I will sucker for punishment. I will be in on Luzardo next year if this type of thing holds.
Oh, for sure, because if you can get him as an SP5 or something, very intriguing. Knowing same argument I had coming into this year, like, look at his ADP, what he could produce, and it's like, okay, let's roll the dice and see what happens on that one. Oof, Mackenzie Gore, my man, Mackenzie Gore. Great start against the Giants because, well, the Giants suck, so you got that going for you. But it's been not as Luzardo-esque, but very frustrating second half of the season. We talked about it on the last show, actually. Like, it's been a second half decline back-to-back seasons, but it's still a guy that has a 4.09 ERA, 1.33 WHIP with a 13.5% swinging strike rate. I still like the kid. I think there's a lot to like. I think we saw a lot of steps in the right direction this season. It just didn't finish strong. So where are you at on Mackenzie Gore?
I'm still in. I think we talked about him on our last 30-day pitcher show where things were starting to decline, and then the Giants can cure all ills for left-handed pitching, and Gore comes out and shoves. So this is a little bit like kind of the same type of deal for Mackenzie Gore. The strikeouts are there. 158 Ks is really good, but he is a team whip extraordinaire. This probably will be Mackenzie Gore's first season with a sub 1.4 whip, which is a very low bar to clear, but he is clearing it. Something does seem weird with the first half, second half split with him, though. Just, I don't know, cannot get over that hump for an entire season, kind of string together at least five solid months. It's always kind of falling apart in second half for him.
Yeah, he's trying to do his best. Eduardo Rodriguez, let's get a 1.4 whip every single season, but rack up strikeouts just to suck you back in. So that's kind of where we're at. Joey Cantillo, nice seeing him on this list. 4.11 ERA, 1.4 whip. A lot of that was out of the bullpen before he came back in July to join the rotation. 12.5% swinging strike, 32% CSW with that 39% walk. I mean, ball percentage is bad because I'll just say the 7 starts he's made since joining the rotations, 18 walks of 39 Ks in 33 innings. So the ball percentage is a concern, but the overall production, there's room for promise, I think.
Yeah. It's just tough for me to, if assuming Cantillo stays in the rotation long-term, like this does feel like a really good like closer arm type of thing long-term, just because the stuff is pretty damn good for Joey Cantillo. But like, I don't know, man, he hasn't gone 6 innings in any of his starts. That's the biggest thing with this, the inability to throw strikes. A 39% ball rate is really bad. And it just leads to inefficient outings, walks, not being able to go. He can probably reach 5, but not 6 very often. It's just hard to get wins when you 5 and dive. And I think that needs to improve for Cantillo for me to be able to kind of trust him. For now, I like him as like a streamer, but even streaming wise, like, doesn't matter who you face, if you can't throw strikes, it's going to be a problem. So I don't really know what to do with Cantillo. Like, he's still young, 25 years old. Like, there's plenty of time for this to turn around if he just kind of, something clicks, he's able to throw some more strikes, because the stuff is absolutely there for mega strikeout totals.
It's a thing with the Guardians. You have Cantillo. You have Gavin Williams, who's had some walk issues, but the strikes are there with Gavin Williams. Tanner Bibee, this is the lost cause of a season with Tanner Bibee right now. But they have a group of pitchers. They're still young. If they could just find a way to tweak a few things, could be interesting. George Kirby would not be on this list tomorrow after he actually shoved against Baltimore on Tuesday night, 7 shutout innings. But before that, he had a 4.04 ERA, 1.13 whip. And he just dominates like usual. I think Ryan put this on the list just so he could smile.
I love George Kirby, man.
I know.
This is beautiful. This 4.04 ERA, 1.13 whip. It is, I think Kirby gave up 11 earned runs in his first 2 starts. Remember, like, George Kirby obviously missed a ton of time to start the season, had the injury in spring, did not look George Kirby-esque his first couple starts, kept saying, just wait it out. It will be there for George Kirby, and he's just doing George Kirby things with a higher swinging strike than normal. Looked very good. Watched most of that Baltimore start on Tuesday. Looked elite. So very excited for George Kirby. I will be drafting him probably as an SP1 on many teams next season.
All right. The favorite pitcher of the Bubba and Bloom Discord, Jack Flaherty.
This is your guy, man.
Apparently it is. I have standing up for Flaherty. I need to get Sporer in there to stand up for Flaherty too. He has a 4.56 ERA, 1.28 whip, gave up 5 runs in the 5th inning alone on Tuesday because he got BABIP to depth. That was annoying. But the 1.28 whip could be better. It's still I look at a 4.56 ERA and I expect worse. Let's put it that way. 12% swinging strike, 29% CSW, 36% ball rate. And it makes sense because one thing we talk about with him, he's after tonight's start, 153 Ks to 49 walks and 124 innings pitched. He still has a almost 20% K to walk, which is everything we want to see in more, Ryan. So this is a guy that I still like a lot. He's not your ace. You should never draft him to be your ace, right? But this is a guy that I think can definitely fill out your rotation.
I think like a solid SP3 type deal for Jack Flaherty. Another one with previous injury concerns who is now on pace to throw, what, 150, 100, well, it's certainly 140 plus innings for 3 years in a row, which is really good for Jack Flaherty. It's just one of those deals where, I mean, this happens. It's just the BABIP hasn't been right for him, a little bit of a homer problem. That stuff tends to kind of correct year to year and kind of fluctuate back to league average. Jack Flaherty's been, like you said, not elite, not, you know, George Kirby or some of these other guys on this list, but certainly has been better than the 4.56 ERA, 1.28 whip, which again will rise after the White Sox BABIPed outing. I did not watch the start, but I'll take your word for it. Outing from Jack Flaherty today.
All right, the last one we have here is Mr. Bailey Ober, who has just been overly obnoxious to roster this season with a 5.16 ERA, a 1.38 whip. But you see the 33% ball, which is fine, 27% CSW, 11% swinging strikes. He's kind of around average, maybe a little below average in those categories. This is a guy we expected big things of coming into this season, Ryan. It has not come to fruition. He's only got 82 Ks and 103 innings pitched. I think we expected much more than that. He's made two starts since returning from his sabbatical. He's thrown 11 innings, allowed 5 runs, walked 2, and struck out 8. Like, this is a guy that we were expecting big strikeout numbers from, and none of it has really happened this year.
None of it has happened. This is one where, like, yeah, you look at these kind of per pitch, these three types of strike type deals. It's like, yeah, Ober is on the list, but kind of take a deeper look. Of anyone on this list, Bailey Ober has the lowest swinging strike rate in one of the lowest ball rates, which tells me he's living in the zone kind of way too often and giving up way too much contact, and in Ober's case, hard contact and home runs. And for Bailey Ober, like, I do think he's been pitching hurt. I think he's been hurt this season. The velocity's down. Like, all of that stuff kind of has molded into this pretty much disaster outing or disaster season, rather, for Bailey Ober. So for me, it's all about health. I'm not giving up on Bailey Ober quite yet. Like, he's, I think, and I'm not even talking 2025 at this point, but just long term for his career. I think still young enough where he can turn this around. It's just all, is he healthy? Will that velocity return next season? This is somebody who, looking forward to next season, I will certainly be looking at velocity readings in the spring and just see, can he get back up to previous levels? Because Bailey Ober, command guy, like, If it's not there, this could fall apart rapidly. But the flip side of that is, if you kind of buy that Ober's been pitching hurt and he's R&R this offseason, gets better and is back to the way that he was, I think he can be good again. But it's been brutal, and someone, at least for 2025, like, he's kind of deserved this these horrible ratios.
Spore in the chat says Ober's fall will be quick. It might not be here yet, but he's living on a wire with the velo and home run rate. It's not good. It's not good at all. It's not the guy that we've seen in past seasons to be optimistic about. Like, we thought him and Joe Ryan were 1A and 1B, or get throw Pablo in there, 1A, 1B, 1C. Like, we thought they were all the aces of that staff, and Ober is not even close. It's pretty brutal right now. All right, let's peek at the, I guess, I'm going to call them the lucky side of things that should not be having the skill set, because they don't have a high swinging strike. They don't have a high CSW, and they throw a lot of balls.
They do nothing well.
Yeah. They somehow luck box their way into production. Yeah. I have nothing else to say about Randy Vasquez because he's back in AAA, thank God. But every start he pitched, I stacked against him praying it would blow up, and it never did.
And this is one too where, like, and this will be a common theme among this group. So for the podcast listeners, this is a group of anyone with 60 plus innings. This is the worst combination of swinging strike, called strike, and ball percentage in baseball with a sub 4 ERA. So these are guys who, at least the ERA has been good, but everything else has been bad. This is one where you can kind of look down the whip column. Like, whip is a little bit more dependable than ERA. And a lot of these guys who are even just like Randy Vasquez, who's living with a 3.93 ERA. Yes, you have that, but you have a bad whip. You have no strikeouts. Like, I guess Randy Vasquez has been lucky in terms of run prevention, but even that, fantasy value wise, just has not been there and will not be there. Like, good God, this guy is a 6.4 swing strike. That has to be one of the lowest in baseball. I'm probably being nice there. It may be the lowest.
It's bad. It's bad. It's the nicest way I'll say it. Let's talk Jose Quintana, the veteran. He seems to do this year in and year out, where he just kind of peters along. You can stream him from time to time. As Kevin Hasting in the chat just jumped in, so these are streamers. Yeah, they can be at times. That's no doubt about that. And Quintana is that kind of dude. Like, he, his last start, one run over 6 innings of 3 Ks. Start before that, 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 Ks. It's been 2 runs or less in 4 straight starts in 6 of his last 7. It's just not flashy. He's not racking up strikeouts with a 6.7% swinging strike, a 25% CSW, and a 39% ball rate. So he's relying on balls in play and getting himself out of trouble. And that's something he's done his whole career pretty much, but it doesn't leave you warm and fuzzy, especially staring at this.
Doesn't leave you warm and fuzzy, but then, like, you look at, this has been a common theme what we talked about more so on the Fab shows this season, but like, a lot of the league is really bad against left-handed pitching. And guess who has I'm pull up the starting pitching planner while you were talking, Bubba. Guess who has the easiest schedule pitching wise over the next 2 weeks of anyone in baseball?
Guessing Quintana.
Jose Quintana. He gets the Cincinnati Reds. It is at Great American Small Park.
Dude, they're abysmal for lefties.
So bad against lefties. And then your San Francisco Giants, the next two starts for Jose Quintana. So, like, you are starting.
I will pitch him. Yes.
I mean, yeah. I mean, even in 12s, like, you are rolling with Jose Quintana. The other thing with Jose Quintana, yes, he's had a couple bad seasons. 2019 was rough. 2021 was rough. But at what point, I'm going to list out these ERAs the last 4 years for Quintana. What point do you just kind of believe something that the skills aren't capturing? Last 4 years, ERA, Quintana, 293 back in 2022. Then 357, 375, 344. Jose Quintana has had 10 wins in each of the last two seasons, 10 wins and counting in 2025. So it's like, this is one where I need to kind of check. Like, I'm not making this case that Jose Quintana is awesome or whatever. This is more me just like checking myself process wise. It's like, I still need to be somewhat open to some of these guys who've been able to do this for a while. And especially with these lefties, because there are so many teams that struggle against southpaws, like, you don't want to write these guys off just by looking at the skills. That goes against a lot of what I say on this show, but like, this, that is one where I just need to kind of be like, all right, take a little bit more context and what are these guys doing and what is their matchups moving forward.
And that's the big thing. It's matchups. It's streaming. Like, you're not starting these guys. You're not starting them for 30 starts in a season. Like, you're just not. You won't trust that deal. But you'll look at the Great American start. You'll love the Giants start. There's probably going to be about 3 or 4 more as the season comes winding down, because the lefties do stuck. Or batters do stuck versus lefties this year in baseball. So there's a window where Quintana can be very successful, to your point. And I know I have streamed him in years past quite a bit for those exact reasons you have mentioned. Yep. Taiwan Walker did not expect to see a 3.39 ERA and a 1.29 whip. He has a 7.2% swinging strike and a 25% CSW to go with a 37% walk rate. I watched a few innings of his start on Monday against the Reds in Great American, where he threw 6 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. Like, he hasn't struck out anybody. It's been 2-4-0-3-4-3-1-1-1. It's been brutal. He's had 7 Ks. He's had 5 or more Ks in 3 of his total outings this year. It's been all below that. But he's also only has 26 walks over 95 innings pitched. Okay. My point when I said I watched him against Cincinnati, again, bad offense, he actually looked good. His fastball had some velo on it. He was, like, making a swing and miss high in the zone. I'm not vouching for Taiwan Walker, but, again, we have 6 weeks basically to go. There might be windows to stream this man.
Perhaps, though. I think Nola might take his job.
Nola could take his job, for however long that is, he could take it. That's a great comp for the two, actually.
I was going to say, are we
Are we
beer betting? No, do I smell some brew?
Dude, Nola might take Jesus Lizardo's job, okay? Let's just be real about the situation here.
I tried to get you for a Taiwan Walker beer.
Not a chance. Not a chance. I do a lot of dumb things. Not getting me there on a sober Tuesday night.
Not doing that. I tried. Yeah, you can't blame me for trying.
No, I appreciate the effort.
I don't have much for Taiwan Walker. I just think you listing out those strikeouts by start is
bad.
It's just like, even if Taiwan Walker pitches well, you're not getting Ks. Probably he's got 4 wins in 14 starts. I don't know. He's just not good.
All right, a guy that I do like, and he will rate out high in your matchups sheet, Ryan, is Logan Allen. He was one of the top guys heading into this week with the two-step. He threw five innings, allowed, I think, three runs on Tuesday night, four walks and five Ks. Coming into that start, 3.96 ERA, a 1.37 whip, 7.8% swinging strike, 25% CSW, and a 38% walk rate. It's another guy, though. He does have a lot of five-plus strikeout games, not a ton, but he gets you there. He gets you 5 to 6 innings. It's a consistent profile, and it's been 3 earned runs or less. It's nothing flashy with Logan Allen, but if you just go through what he's done in his game log and compare it to what he's done on this sheet, very serviceable in the streaming department.
And number 4 on our starting pitching planner in terms of ease of schedule for the next 2 weeks. One of those was today against Miami. I don't know how he did.
But he did fine. 5 innings. I'll get you the exact numbers. It was 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 walks, 5 Ks.
Okay.
Joe Adell just walked it off. 7-6 Angels win in 10.
There we go. Premature info from Burks. I said we can't trust that guy, but he actually did get it right a couple innings later. Logan Allen. So yes, like that Miami line that you just mentioned, that is why you stream Logan Allen. And like sometimes that works out for a win and you're happy. Next 2 starts will be against the Atlanta Braves. Just disaster of a team and not hitting well against lefties to boot. And then at the Texas Rangers, which Texas has been one of the shout out doctors. You just put an Angels hat on.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
They just beat the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's
and now the Padres are tied for first place. The Dodgers are not alone in first. It's a great night to be alive.
Man, ever since he started legging the Angels, they're legit.
I go to the stadium, and you know the Grom's not the same. When the Dodgers are losing, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Rest of the season, Logan Allen or Jose Quintana?
Ooh, that's good. I would go with actually Allen's a better strikeout arm. I'll go to Logan Allen.
I mean, I think the answer is matchups, but I can see that with Logan Allen. I still don't think he's that great, but yeah, you match up and you do it with some of these lefties. So Allen and Quintana, though, they are high up on this list of guys who have the worst combination of strikes, types of strikes this season. Like I'm still attracted to in the right spot.
Spore says Quintana. Quintana's probably got a better shot for wins.
Better win. Yeah. I mean, Quintana, I mentioned he has 10 wins. Milwaukee, like, God, they cannot lose. It's nuts.
I love it. Give me a Milwaukee Seattle postseason. Let's go. That'd be glorious.
Every broadcast
company would hate it. Yeah. I hope you are. Yeah. All right. I'm skipping Valente Belazo. Nothing to really go off of there. She's not around anymore. Brian Bello,
what happened?
3-2-5. No, he's. I haven't seen him pitch in the starting rotation in a while, so I totally missed it. Brian Bello, 3.25 ERA, 1.29 WHIP, 8.7% swinging strike, 25% CSW, 38% ball rate. This is a guy that so many of us have wanted to be good for so long. Never really comes to fruition. Has looked pretty. He has given up 3 earned runs or less in every start since May 23rd. Like that doesn't suck. He has walk issues. Strikeouts are inconsistent, but a lot of 5-plus K games. Very polarizing profile when I look at Brian Bello. Like, I see signs of, okay, maybe the kid's figuring it out, and there's other signs. It's like, got a little ways to go here. And this page right here gives me the thinks he's got a little ways to go here.
Yeah, which is also why I'm not really in on Bello. Though I will add one other skill to this conversation, that is ground ball rate. I'm surprised it hasn't come up yet, but Brian Bello is pretty good at getting ground balls, which I always like to see. It's a 49% ground ball rate for Brian Bello, but no, I don't think this is a big step forward for Bello. Like all the HQ expected ERA is 4.10, which again is serviceable. Like this guy isn't terrible when you add in the ground ball rate with these types of strikes, but it's someone pitching well above his head. Like I think I have Bello in a couple drafting holds, and I've just been so hesitant to my detriment to throw him out there because the results have been there, 8 wins on top of it, but I don't see it taking a step forward. And this is someone, like you said, like we're waiting for a major step forward. On the surface, it looks like it, but I don't know, man. I don't think so.
All right, let's go to Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo, 3.46 ERA, 1.2 WHIP. Got shellacked for 7 runs against the Twins in his last start. Other than that, primarily been kind of the Seth Lugo of old. Strikeouts have been there more often than not. But 43 walks, 108 strikeouts, 127 at third innings pitched. The biggest thing is last year he accumulated innings, which accumulated strikeouts, which accumulated wins. He's not doing that. It feels like, again, I am not looking at last year's numbers, but I feel like he's doing the same thing he was doing last year, just without the same volume.
Pretty much. I mean, the ratios are a little bit elevated, but compared to last year, I mean, it's a 3 flat ERA, 109 whip last season for Seth Lugo. You're right. Like, no one was expecting Lugo to throw 206 innings again in his age 35 season. That has not come to fruition, and everything kind of drags down from that. Like, Lugo needs to throw a ton of innings for that mediocre strikeout rate to make an impact. I mean, last year he had 16 wins. Like, I mean, again, no one was expecting that, but still, you could take the flip side of this, and this is the fifth straight season for Seth Lugo with a sub 360 ERA, fourth straight season with a sub 120 ERA. Like, similar to what I was talking about with Quintana, it's like I could have been fading Seth Lugo for the last four seasons and been wrong each of the last four. So I don't know. It's not my process to go after pitchers like this where you need a ton of innings and they're old.
Yeah, but also in previous seasons, he didn't cost you anything on draft day where you had to actually pay for this last year. We talked about it earlier. Like, when we finished our meatball 11 rounds, that was one of the popular names of look who's still out there. You had that list of, you know, according to player rating or whatever.
Yep.
And that was a big conversation point. So,
and Seth Lugo was, looking back, at least for HQ, has an ADP of 180, which I think is across all NFBC drafts last season. So, you did spend, I mean, that's not a top pick, but 180, a top 200 pick.
Used to be like a late 200s pick before. That's where, like, you could live with a lot of the, I guess, quote unquote, struggles he might have given you at the time. Two more. Adrian Houser, 2.84 ERA, 1.32 whip. An 8.7% swing and strike, 25% CSW, 35% ball rate, was outstanding for the White Sox. Goes to the pitching factory in Tampa. He's given up 9 runs in 2 starts. I don't even know what to think about this man, besides I'm probably not going to roster him the rest of the season.
And that's what this 2.84 ERA, it was that like magical run with Chicago, with the White Sox. Start his season. It was very delayed. But last 4 starts for Houser, 15 Ks in 21 innings. Not great. 8 walks you throw on top of that. He has killed you. 1.85 whip, 6.23 ERA over the last month for Mr. Houser. The second he was traded to Tampa, I was just like, why are we doing that? So
why do we ruin good things? Why do we do it? All right, last one we have here is a pitcher I've wanted to see in the rotation for a while. I think you've been interested in this as well. At least in the past, we've discussed Ryan Nelson of the Arizona Diamondbacks. 3.46 ERA, 1.06 whip, which is outstanding. It's basically the best whip out of anybody on either board we discussed tonight. A 9% swinging strike rate, 24% CSW, and a 35% walk or ball percentage, which is just fine. He re-entered the rotation for good on June 7th, so he's made a handful of starts since then. And out of all the pitchers we talked about, it makes sense he's at the bottom of this list, Ryan. It's like 95 Ks in 106 innings, to 30 walks, 3.46 ERA, 3.95 xFIP. Like, he's been pretty good.
He's been decent. 15% came on his walk for Nelson. Like, that's not bad. Next two matchups are, it's at Coors, but it is the Rockies, and then home against the Reds, which can work. I think Nelson's just decent streamer in 15s, where I'd probably start him in maybe like 60% of matchup, something like that.
That plays, especially if you're on this board.
It does.
Couldn't say that for most guys on this board. So, like, it's Quintana, it's Allen, Bayo and Lugo are kind of in their pocket, and then Nelson probably leads the way on this board. That sound about right? Or where would you look at this? Who would you consider on there? How would you consider ranking the usable arms here?
I'd say Quintana, Lugo, Allen, Nelson.
Still no Bayo love. Can't Bayo, get you out of that world.
Okay. Yeah, get Bayo out of here. Belozo last.
Wow. Brian Bayo, what did he do to you? No, Randy Vasquez last. That bum. Like, how did he pull it off?
That's true. Belozo, even if he's not pitching second to last.
Yeah, that's fair. Ahead of Randy, we didn't talk about Mike Vassell because that's a whole nother freaking.
No, we don't need to. We don't need to do
that. No, he's paid three starts. He's pitched out of the bullpen and just luck boxed his way to where he's at right about now. Because, well, that's what the White Sox are doing these days.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, Ryan. Boards are done. No questions because it's football season, apparently. I actually have one question for the chat.
I got it right here.
Spore says, did this swinging strike CSW ball triumvirate uncover any gems for you this year? Maybe Pivetta? Anybody?
So it's funny. So since I saw that earlier from Paul, it looks like we did do something similar to this last season at the end of last season, September. We did this similar exercise, but just since the All-Star break. So basically the second half of last year. I did not filter it by sub-4 ERA guys for whatever reason, but I'll just spin off the top 10 in the second half from last season in terms of this combination of three types of strikes. It was Blake Snell, who we saw that second half run from Snell, so that checks out, even though it's been disappointing. Spencer Schwellenbach, number two, that would have certainly won this year until he got hurt. Garrett Crochet, number three, despite a 6.20 ERA last season in the second half. I don't remember it being that high, but that's wild. Garrett Crochet was number three. Chris Sale, number four. Again, would have worked till he broke his rib. Spencer Arrighetti was five. Michael King, if he didn't sleep wrong.
These are all injured guys. My goodness.
They're all injured guys. Michael King. Tariq Skubal was sixth. Sonny Gray, seventh. Robbie Ray, eighth. Yusei Kikuchi, ninth. Or maybe 10th. I must have lost count. So, I don't know. In terms of like, yeah, a lot of those guys get hurt, but like every pitcher gets hurt. In terms of like actual skills and innings for this season, I feel like that's a pretty solid.
That's a good list.
List.
Yeah, it's a really good list.
In terms of per inning stuff. So, guess who was last year out of anybody?
Who?
The Facade. Javier Assad, 3.10 ERA, yet had the worst combination of three types of strikes.
Now I know why this board was created. He had to get a Facade in there.
Yeah, that was it. Luis Ortiz was also on this list.
Well, that makes sense, too, and he gambled on himself and lost. But, yeah, I mentioned it in the Discord because I was watching the start of that Cubs-Jays game, and Facade gave up a run early, was teetering again, and literally was just getting – just soft contact to like the warning track and stuff. It was just such a facade. It was impressive. Impressive stuff.
Hey, you got to earn the nickname for me to give it to you. He has earned it.
Yep. Still working on mine. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up and head to week 22 Fab on Thursday night?
No, just something to kind of take a look at. Both, I think we kind of hopefully mix in some stuff for rest of season 25, but also early 2026 stuff. And yeah, appreciate the question, Paul, because it is always good to kind of look back at this stuff a year later. It's easy to kind of do these pods and never look back on how things actually turned out. So glad I could kind of find that at the end. But yeah, swinging strike rate, called plus CSW, called plus swinging and ball rate. You'll hear us mention all the time swing, strike, and ball rate on the show. Something that kind of we both believe in. Really good indicators for strikeout and walk rate, and it's something we will both stick to.
Yeah, because I believe I might be quoting this wrong because I'm good at that. It's like basically if you use swing and strike, like a rough math is if you can double it, that should be the expected strikeout rate of a pitcher.
Yeah, more like rule of thumb type of deal.
So it kind of gives you. So if you use that and then look at the ball percentage, you can get a rough idea of maybe they walk a lot of guys or not type thing. Just the kind of rough numbers in your head. There's your K to walk in theory if you want to just get, you know, caveman math real quick. Mm-hmm. So it's one way to use the board and decipher other factors to it that we love to use on this show. Reminder, no Tuesday show next week, but it will be Wednesday after the meatball draft, fresh off the just laughing at how many dumb picks I probably make through 11 rounds of drafting and see who Ryan's mistakenly takes with the second pick overall. It's going to be an absolute blast as we talk trash through that with the meatballs on Rob's pod and then afterwards on our pod. So hope you guys enjoy that. Tune in. It'll be live as usual next Wednesday evening whenever we wrap up. Might have to take a bathroom break before we start, but pretty quickly afterwards. But we'll wrap it up there. Make sure to check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick. This is Bubba and the Bloom episode 267. Catch you all next time.